Welcome to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. Episode number 47. Hello, everyone. My name is Tom Brussell, and thank you so much for joining us. Whether you're a first-time listener or a wily veteran, we are sure glad you're with us. If you're a new listener, I want to introduce somebody who's with me every episode, technical specialist Kenny Nicholson. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. It's Friday. I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Tom?
I'm doing great. Before we get into today's show, let's talk a little bit about the last one. A lot of great feedback and a lot of swing instruction questions you've been getting because of Kate Whitney that was on the show.
Yeah, Kate Whitney with Swing Right Golf came in and was actually in studio with us, which was kind of unique, but it was great to have her in here. And their training aid device, which helps you understand, you know, exactly where the release position is in the golf swing, created a little bit of buzz out there, got a lot of questions from it, and I think that the momentum for them would be good moving forward just having her on the show. It's a great training aid. Like I said on the show before, my daughter uses it. I use it when I'm out there. It's something that I like to use right before I get out on the golf course because it kind of gets you in that mindset, you know, where the release point is, and it helps generate club head speed. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, I recommend going back and listening to it. And absolutely, if you, you know, want to hone that golf swing just a little bit more, Swing Right training aid's one that you need to look at.
Kenny, we got two very special guests today from Titleist Golf joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't be more excited. We've had some great guys on the show before, but joining us today is going to be Mr. Bob Vokey. And obviously, you've heard of Vokey Wedges before. And Mr. Steve Pelisek, who is the general manager at Titleist Golf. Guys, how you doing today?
All right. We're doing great, guys. I like to say I'm still getting away with it.
It's wonderful. Well, hey, we want to lead in a little bit with Mr. Vokey. Is that fine, or do you want me to call you Bob?
Bob is great.
Okay, Bob. Sounds great. But I read into your bios, obviously, to get some information. I mean, me personally, been in the golf business for, you know, 16, 17 years. And when I think of the name Vokey, I strictly think of just wedges. But your background, obviously, was – you worked on drivers and things of that nature as well. How did you get your passion started in the golf?
Well, I guess I'd have to go all the way back to my dad. You know, I was born in Canada many, many years ago, and the golf business has shortchanged in the time I've been in it. But anyway, my dad was always a tinker. He's a very, very, very low handicapper. You know, and at that time, I always thought golf was for women and old men. You know, I always played hockey, baseball, football. I played the contact sports, you know, and I was – And then, but I tinkered with my dad, and he always wanted me to play. So all of a sudden, I started playing. We were in the garage tinkering all the time, doing different things, trying a lot of different combinations. All of a sudden, it's got to be a hobby with me. Then I realized, doggone. Then I hurt myself in my early 20s playing football, knee operation. So I sort of turned to golf a little bit. I started to play, and I thought I could play pretty well. All of a sudden, I realized that, you know, shooting 72 with about 26 putts is not going to get it. You know, so. Turned around, I just really, that little passion, I continued to work, and it was basically a hobby, and I took that passion, and I basically turned it into a livelihood. And, you know, from there, I took all that my dad, he was a fine tool and die maker, and I spent all my summers while going to school working on machines and, you know, honing things and long hour work grinders and all everything else, lathes and everything. So I took all that knowledge, and I applied it, I guess, to my trade, and all of a sudden I had my own little shop, and then many years ago, TaylorMade, the very earliest, come by and asked me if I'd go to work with them when they moved to the West Coast over here in California. So sure enough, I did, and I did that, and I started off with the tour. They wanted me to go out on tour, so probably in the very early 80s, I started working with TaylorMade on the tour, and getting to know a lot of it, and I was always specialized at that particular time. I loved drivers. Drivers were my passion. Of course, irons and wedges were sort of like they were like a little sideline to me. I knew what they were. To me, they were at that time, I called them basically, you know, they were just something to get you out of trouble. You know, I never realized how much of a offensive weapon they have become in the later years. So I took all that knowledge and I went from Founders Club, TaylorMade. Then I went over to when Gary Adams started a company called Founders Club, I went with Gary Adams to start Founders Club. It was a very, very great venture there. And then I started to specialize. I did all the design with Founders Club, and then I really started to get into wedges because we wanted a line of wedges there. I got serious with them. Then that went along pretty good for five to 6 years. And then that particular time, a good friend of mine was head of R&D at that time with Titleist, and he said, Volk, he said, would you be interested in coming over to Titleist? I'm working on some new products. That particular time, he was working on a little driver we had called the 975, so I was fortunate to work on that 975 driver and did a lot of the final work with it, shaping it, because I knew what the tour players would like to look at a driver. So went from drivers, and after we got that going, he said, Volk, he said, what would you like to do? He said, Titleist would like to really get going on wedges. I said, hey, let's do it. So I was very fortunate that Wally Uline gave me all the tools and all the information, everything I needed to pursue, I call it, my dream. And my dream was wedges, and I always tinkered with them, and I was always what I call a great listener and a note-taker. You know, I was never the type to get in the bunkers. I'd get down and dirty, and I'd watch and feel and listen to sounds, and I'd take all these notes. I took all these notes, and I compiled them, and all of a sudden I took that, and I said, okay, guys, here we go. I put it in. I sat there, and
we
away I went.
Years. We were 2 years
two
in
years,
project.
Remember that?
Yeah.
2 years in the project before I actually came out. I came out with, at that time, we had a Series 200. Then we had, which is was our main line. Then also, we call it Series 300, which had a little more offset. And also went into what I always call my favorite, was my Series 400. So I had these three lines that we went with originally. And then gradually, we weeded them out to the movers, I call movers and the shakers. And that happened to be in the 200 series. And then from we went into the long come the spin mill. And I guess that's basically a brief little
background. How that all happened.
All happened, and I'm happy to be here, and very thankful for Titleist.
Master Craftsman Bob Volke joining us along with Steve Pelisek from Titleist. Bob, back in the day, it was just the pitching wedge and the sand wedge. Tell us about the process of when you started seeing the other specialty wedges coming into play, the gap wedge or the A wedge, the lob wedge, now even the 64-degree wedge in some senses, right?
Unbelievable. You know, when I started growing up and I thought I could play pitching wedges at the time, the loft was in, like, I'd say 50, anywhere between 50 and 52. And sand wedges were in that 56-degree loft. That was pre, I'm going back a few years, that was even before 58s and 60s and lobbers came into being. So I turned around and I saw that what the manufacturers, as a result, they wanted to have all, hey, let's sell a club, hit it further. Usually that was it. So remember the first ones I saw, they called the Plus, the Hogan's. Back in the 70s, I guess it started, later 60s, early 70s, everybody started cranking irons a little stronger, you know, the lofts. And as a result, next thing you know, pitching wedges gradually all the way down to in that 46 to 48 degree range. And what happened, though, the sand wedge still stayed at 56. So what it did, it created one heck of a gap in there. So that was and I said, wait a sec. I said, geez, there's a great, great need for a gap wedge. So long come, we call my 50s, 51s, 52s to fill that gap, and then sand wedges got a little stronger, so that all of a sudden the 54 comes into being, and then fellas wanted different shots to create different shots, so along comes the 58. And then, of course, the lobbers. The lobbers came into being probably back in the early 80s. You know, I call lobber, which I call anywhere from 58 on up to now 64, you know. So, I mean, it was a need to fill a gap, and I think there's a I could keep going on. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I can tell you one thing. There's the average weekend golfer, I'd like to see him put, he may have a stronger wedge at 46, anywhere 46, 47, 48. He's got himself somewhere in there, and he's got a 56-degree sand wedge. And what he does, he reaches for a lob wedge first off the bat. He throws in a 60-degree. I'm thinking, wait a second. I think he'd do a lot better off putting in a 52 rather than a 60. That's just for the average weekend golfer.
Yeah, that's dead on. That's what we tell our consumer here. That, you know, what's the most important club in the bag? And that's the first thing I ask them is, well, what's your set consist of? Because if you've got a pitching wedge, then your next club is a sand wedge. That's too big of a gap in what we call the scoring area.
No doubt about it.
That's you're talking 100 yards in, and a guy's got anywhere from 8 to 10 degrees different loft in golf clubs. There's too much of a gap there. So the gap wedge, I think, is extremely important. One of the things that we get tons of questions on is bounce of wedges.
Wow.
I've tried to describe it to the consumer because it's hard to, you know, visualize it without being able to see it. But I tell them it's like pitch on a roof, where the sole of the golf club is like the soffit or the bottom, and then the pitch, you know, how steep the roof is what the bounce is. That's the leading edge is off the ground, you know, so many degrees. And is there a standard or
way I like to do it, I would turn around. I would take a sand wedge, and you hold it out with the grip down and opposite fork to toe leading away from you. And you look at the solar wedge, put it up to almost 90 degrees in front of your eyes. As you're holding it away from you, you look and you'll see the trailing edge and the leading edge. You see the trailing edge is higher than the leading edge. And as a result, that's what I call bounce. That's the angle. In other words, you know what I would say, bounce is like the sole of the club or the flange. In other words, it's almost like a rudder on a ship. If you took that rudder and you turned it sideways, that rudder, what it's actually doing is keeps your club from sliding forward, prevents you from digging. And as a result, you know, you're going to see there's a lot of different reasons. There's different pitches you call, a pitch you call on the roof. This is an angle. You'll see bounce angles, they'll go anywhere from zero for the more, call it the better player. It could go all the way up to 16 to the average weekend golfer. So that's what I basically would call the angle. It's the angle from the leading edge to the trailing edge, measured.
And don't you think, Bob, that there's a very direct correlation between the skill level of the player amount of bounce they should have on their wedge?
No doubt about it.
Yeah, that's what we say. I tell them bounce is your friend.
This is, you know, you mentioned that, you know, and I said, you'll hear me talk, and I talked to some of the best wedge teachers, you know, me and Stan Utley, he's one of the better ones out there, and we tell all the time, bounce is your friend. I'll say, you'll hear it all the time. I'll go on record as saying that. Because it's funny, you know, a little thing about that, I don't want to get ahead of my story, but I got a story. Lee Trevino called me, not last night, night before, we're talking different things. He's an old buddy of mine. I was his club maker back in the 80s. And that's where I learned a lot of my knowledge from. He was probably one of the better wedge players out there. You know, he's high on my list. He's in my top five that I've ever worked with. But anyway, he says, Bob, he says, you know, I'm out here in Florida, and I'm having a little trouble. The sand's a little soft and fluffy. He said, God, I said, I need a little more bounce. You know, here's a fella, a very accomplished player who used what I call a mid-bounce. All of a sudden, he wants to have a little bit more bounce because of course conditions. You know, so it was very unique to say that. And I kept bugging him. I said, hey, Lee, you're getting old, buddy. You know?
Yeah. That guy could definitely get it done. And that's one of the questions we ask, you know, the consumers is, where do you live? I mean, because.
No doubt about it.
West Texas is a lot different than Northwest Florida, where it's soft and moist.
Oh, yes. Guaranteed. I'll tell you, you know, boy, it is.
And you've got a formula, though, Bob, use. I mean, it's the player's technique.
Technique is very, very important.
The sand conditions where he plays.
I'll go over it pretty quick, and if I may get a hold of myself, but stop me anytime and ask any type of questions. This is all coming right off the top of my head. You know, I always class golfers, whether they be by their skill levels, and I'll class them in two categories, what I call a digger, then a slider. A digger is a type of golfer. He's probably your mid to higher handicap golfer, your weekend golfer, almost like myself right now. But anyway, as a result, he has a tendency to take the club straight up and drops it straight down. He doesn't have the ability. He doesn't have that, I call it that long, slow, syrupy swing. He drops it straight down behind the ball. As a result, now that's the individual player that's going to need, I call, a little bit more bounce and maybe a little wider flange to help him. Then you got your better golfer, probably what you guys are probably, no doubt, and also all the tour players, I call them sliders. They like to take a lot of rotation. They take a shallow cut, like to take a little shallow swing. They take a little shallow divot, little shallow cusp of sand. They like to rotate through the ball, and they like to come out spinning. Now, that's the player that gets, I would say, would prefer a little mid-bounce or a little less bounce. And, of course, when you go all the way around, you go different parts of the country, different course conditions. Then I'm going to say, if you get soft sand, soft bunkers, where there's no resistance offered, you have to offer the resistance in the flange of the bounce, the width of the flange and the bounce. So as a result, now if it's soft sand, that's when you're going to have a little bit more bounce. And recommend it anywhere you're going to say 10, 12, 14 degrees of bounce for those conditions. Now you're going to get what I call firm conditions. What I call firm conditions and also what I call firm packed bunkers, maybe river sand, where there is resistance offered there by the turf and sand. And as a result, the ball sits up a little bit. So that's the particular case where you can get away with a little less bounce. Now it's going to, whatever you fit in your parts of the country, those are the rules of thumbs that you want to go by. I would say it's going to go by soft sand, soft turf, firm, digger, slider. You can fit in those categories. You can almost take that formula and use it all over, I would say almost all over the world. It's a usable formula. I mean, it's a lot of other technique and a lot of other, you know, involved skill level. That's all definitely involved too. But I said, basically, I think those are pretty good starting points.
So you simplify it, whether you're a digger or slider, and then the condition of the sand, right?
No doubt about
it. Yeah.
Those are, when we try to put together Kenny Time, when we travel the country teaching our customers how to take this pretty big line of wedges and help folks sort through that and pick the right ones, usually the first question we encourage them to ask is, well, what's the loft on the pitching wedge? Because that's sort of the starting point. That helps determine whether or not you're going to need a gap wedge. And how far can you hit your pitching wedge? Because that's the starting point. Because how many clubs is it going to take you to arm yourself with enough shots to hit all the ones that come from inside your pitching wedge distance? And then after you figure that out and you figure out whether or not and what loft your gap wedge should be, you get into the sand wedge choice, and that's when you start going into, are you a slider or are you a digger? Do you play in soft or firm conditions? So it's a combination of technique and conditions, and also to an extent, you know, Bob Fiennes on tour that you always tell me about is the types of shots that guys like to play.
What we do with our new line, I don't want to sound like I make a little commercial here, but that's what we came along with our latest line with all the different grinds. Those basically were all derived from working with a lot of tour players, four different parts of the country to fit right along with the digger, slider, soft, firm condition type theory, you know, the way we spread out like that, we try to cover it as best can.
That's great. I still have my original Vokey wedge. I think it's a sand wedge, probably 10 years old or so. The bright chrome finish.
Yeah.
Since then, you guys have gone into more different types of finishes, oil can and whatnot. Can you talk about that?
Oh, definitely. Of course, all these finishes, you know, originally what we call our tour chrome, which is actually a brush finish, we went away from the chrome for the main reason of, basically, on tour, I've had a lot of players tell me that you know, when you take a sandwich, because it's the profile of it, it's almost like a pancake, and as a result, it's acting like almost sometimes like a mirror. Sometimes you get a sunny day, happens a lot of times in the sun areas, certain times of day, the reflection would be right in the player's eyes. So actually, there's very few bright sandwiches out on tour right now. They've all went to what they call the brush chrome or satin chrome, and that's where we fit in with our basically tour chrome. Exactly, that's what it is.
And that's the most popular.
That's the most popular.
Far and away the most popular. The other two finishes really come from, there is a group of guys that like unfinished wedges. They're easy to tinker with. Yeah. They're easy to touch on the grinding wheel. They're dull in appearance, which means there's absolutely no glare. There's a group that feels that there's more feel from those types of wedges.
Our oil can probably is our closest version of our original raw, say, rusty wedge that we had out many, many years ago, you know. But that's basically what that wedge is. It's, you know, I don't know if you remember, we had originally had a rusty and had a tendency to raw wedge, we called it. And, you know, in before it got in play. And so we turned around, that's where we came with the oil can. Preserves the finished look, and then when you take it out, it eventually becomes a raw wedge, which is very, very popular on tour, because as a result, I can grind on it without having to worry about going through the chrome. You know,
are they actually different materials?
No, it's actually the same material. The only difference is the chrome. It's a plating on the finish. It's called decorative chrome. It's under a thousandth of an inch coating.
Yeah, they're all the same 80-20 carbon steel, but then the oil can is just a very light dip. It's a preservative that eventually wears off. Tour chrome is a plating that won't wear. Well, I guess you could wear it off.
It wears
thousands of shots.
Yeah.
And then the black nickel is kind of a tweener. It gives you that darker, duller finish without the rust. And we've kind of, you know, started to stop with a number of finishes over the years. Those are overwhelmingly the three most preferred. And so it's kind of fun to just offer those up and see and let people choose.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of the whole spirit of the current line. You go back to that original 200 and 300 and 400 series wedges. What's basically happened is over the years, Bob's done a lot of grinding. You know, he's done a lot of tinkering with players who want just little things, little slight differences in the soles. And it got to the point where there were certain sole grinds that became very popular on tour. And so we just decided to, why don't we just put together kind of a greatest hits compilation? And that's really what this line is. This is Bob's greatest hits in terms of it's the finishes And it's the sole grinds and the bounce configurations that end up being most popular.
It's like they say, Volk, what's your R&D side? I said, I got the best R&D staff in the world, the PGA Tour. I go out there, I do a grind, one fella hits, like, you might have heard my T grind, it's in there, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, in fact, I was working with Tom Pernice, and you know, he's one of the better short game players out there. Next thing you know, four or five other guys see that grind, can I have it? Next thing you know, and we decided to get enough of them on tour. Well, I said, wait a second, maybe this is good on tour, let's let the public have the benefits of it. You know, and that's how these different grinds came into being.
Did you ever imagine that you would have this much success? I mean, the numbers are just crazy. How many players on tour use Vokey wedges?
40% of the wedges, what we read, with gap, sand, lob, everything are Vokey wedges?
Yeah, it's amazing. But it's a tribute to not just yours truly, but it's a tribute to Team Titleist, I like to say. We got a heck of a group of guys, and we all have a passion for what we do. We love what we do. I'm talking from Steve here to Chris McGinley, our sales, everybody. We have a passion. We love what we do, and all my team out there. And I just happen to have my name on the golf club. Well, I tell you, I got a lot of people with me. You know, I spent a lot of years doing and grinding and traveling and making it happen. But it would not happen without the very unbelievable support staff that I have.
Yeah, we can move that up to 41% now because I'm playing Vokey still.
I love it.
I'm not just saying it because you're on, but I mean, I play Vokey wedges, love them, always have. Vokey wedges are like putters, though. Guys get – that's the one club you just don't see for sale that often because they're going to hang on to those for a long, long time.
It's a little sidelight. You like this one. Andy Bean calls me about 3 weeks ago, and I go, Andy from Blind. In fact, he said, Volk, he said, you know, I got a wedge here. It was an old 400 series wedge. It just had Titleist stamped on it. It was one of my very first proto. In fact, he played with it. The Memphis Open, St. Jude's, back in 1990. I'm going all the way back to 97.
That wasn't the leading wedge, was it?
Yeah, no, he actually put it in play then. I was a prototype. I put it in play. So anyway, he turns around and he calls me. He says, Volk, he said, I went and I went in my garage and I pulled out this old wedge, a high polished, bright chrome wedge, and it was a original Titleist wedge, original 400 series, original prototype. He says, Volk, can you make me another one of those? And I said, God, we haven't made that in a couple of years, Andy. But I said, I'll hunt and find for it. But just as you say, he hung on to this wedge, and he went back to his wedge, and he started hitting it, and away it went. Next thing you know, I just made him a couple last week and sent them out to him.
Yeah, it's crazy that you get that memory of, I used to be able to play this, and I was playing really good with it, so you can always pull it back out of your bag.
Exactly what happens all the time. Chad Campbell, another example. You know, he was, after he left Nike, he was looking for wedges. He went back to Cleveland wedges, and back in his Hooter jersey, he used to play his Titleist wedges. All of a sudden, I saw him at the LA Open this year, and I look in his bag, and he's got this old Titleist wedge that I made him probably back about six, 7 years ago. And he says, it was in the bag. He says, Volk, I went back in my garage, I pulled it out of my bag, threw it in, I love it. He says, can you make me a 54 to match it? You know, so it's the way it goes, and I get it all the time, you know, just 2 weeks ago, Todd Hamilton, same thing. He put a 60 in the bag, and he had one from the garage that I gave him about 3 years ago. You know, it's just what they do. You know, wedges. You know, they're searching. You know, you remember, you know, players. We're all the same. It's definitely not the equipment. You know, I mean, it's not the player. It's the equipment. Exactly.
Are you guys seeing a trend of more guys going with the higher, the 64 degree wedges?
It is trending right now because, you know, I've got a neat little story. When Lucas Glover was on our staff, you know, people are asking me, Volk, why do you do a couple of 64s? This is like, I'm talking 3-4 years ago I had him out. And that time I was talking to Dick Harmon, who's since passed away. But anyway, and I said, and he was Lucas's teacher at the time. And I said, Dick, I think the toughest shot for the tour player to hit under the gun, I called it on the backside Sunday afternoon, is that 40, 50-yard shot with a 60-degree. I said, I think he can execute that shot with a 64, even a 62, 63, 64, a lot easier, a little more efficient. We put a little bit more aggressive swing. He can control his spin. He can control his trajectory. And everything distance a lot easier. And Dick said, you know, I've been telling Lucas that for the longest time. I said, oh, Bob, I honestly believe you. And I ran this by a lot of teachers, you know, Butch Harmon included, his good buddy of mine. And he said, Volk, I totally agree with you. So there, as a result, I think I'm averaging about five or six a week in play now. talking a year ago, 2 years ago, I was averaging maybe one. So it's gradually creeping into the bags. I'm a firm believer in a 64 degree. It's almost like cheating in certain cases. But you got to have the ability to hit it. You got to practice with it.
It's not the easiest club to hit. But it does help in those shots where you've got to back off. Don't have to back off.
You know, like Tom Pernice takes his in out of the bag. He says, "Volk, whenever I know I'm going to play a course where I'm going to short side myself occasionally, or another course, then he put it in the bag, then he'll take it out and he'll put in a hybrid when he knows the course when he needs that longer fairway shot in." You know, so he'll go back and forth with it. But there's certain conditions and there's certain players have it in their bag all the time, you know.
As far as shaft, we get some guys and gals that say, "Hey, I want to get a graphite shaft in a particular Vokey wedge." What does shaft have that big or make that big of a difference on the wedge?
Yes, I'm a believer in it. I've always believed in softer shafts, softer, a little more flexible shaft. That's what we did in our wedges. I put what I call a little subflex. It's an S200. I tested a lot of shafts to a lot of players, because over the years, my past experience with a lot of players, including Lee, he would turn around. Sometimes he used to take a Dynalite versus a Dynamic Gold. Instead of his S3 or 4, he'd put a Dynalite in for a little softer feel. Then he'd always take an 8-iron shaft and call it back. He'd put an 8-iron shaft in. It's basically almost like you're backstepping, you know. So it'd be a little softer shaft, which I firmly believe in. I feel it's for those touchy feelings. You get the feedback. You get all the feedback that you need. And it gives you, and also it's strong enough to stay with you occasionally when you want to stand on it, you know. So that's how we came up with that shaft. And it's been a lot of testing, and a little sideline. I'm on a roll now. I remember Tiger used to play our wedges back in.
I remember.
Yeah. And anyway, I remember at Pebble just before he went on a tear, 2000. We're at Firestone. And he says, "Volk," he says, "and he had X100s in his irons. And he had X100s in wedges." I said, "I said, I got a little something. Let's put an S in your wedge." He said, you can hit the shots." So I changed his wedge for it, and it's funny. We're over on the side hitting bunker shots, and all of a sudden he starts flopping shots up in the air. He said, and he yells across, like, out loud, "All right, Mickelson, I got you now." It was one of those things, 1,000, because he was using the X. So as a result, he took off, said, "Volk, they're in the bag." And he went out at that time, I think he shot 30 on a Saturday, and then after that he played, what the heck was it, Pebble? It's one of those.
Yeah, the rest is history.
Yeah, he played Pebble and
won by 12 or something there.
Or something, and I saw him at the British Open after that, and I'm going down one fair, down 18, he's taking off one. I said, "How did it work out?" He says, "Hey, Volk, you saw what they did at Pebble, huh, didn't you?" That's all he said. And then he said to me, he said, "Basically, all he lost was maybe 1, maybe 2 yards in distance, but he gained from going to his X to his S. But he gained so much more around the green," he said, "in the bunker. All the little touchy-feely shots, his lob shots, you know, and his distance control was so much better with the little, slightly softer shaft." So that's my opinion on softer shaft.
Master Craftsman Bob Vokey joining us along with Steve Pelisic from Titleist Golf. Hey, guys, talk a little bit as we close about the spin mill process that you're using in the wedges.
Well, that's awesome. Hey, yeah, I can go the spin mill. What that is? It's a combination of, you know, we hard to explain. I don't know if it showed you in our brochures. We what happens in a cast wedge? And I hate to say it, I'm not saying a Series 200 or other cast wedges are, but during the it's poured metal, and during the casting process, it's what they call a shrink, and it usually shrinks to where the larger flange. So sometimes there could be like a little concavity, you know, in the face. The face is not perfectly flat. So as a result, sometimes, and then when a casting process, it's subject to polishing. So as you polish it, the groove is already pre-cast in there. And as you polish it, depending on the person who's polishing it, depending on the brand new grit, old grit, now there's a certain amount taken off. So sometimes they may take off 3,000 off the face. Another time you may take 6,000. So as a result, sometimes you're getting a groove depth, sometimes maybe 15 thou, maybe 18 thou. The width might be a little different because being of the nature of the walls are angled in. So you can get variability. But the spin mill process, what we did, we have a cutter that actually comes around. It fly cuts the top of the face, and it makes it perfectly flat.
This is with no grooves.
With no grooves.
Yeah, we
make
cast
it perfectly flat.
They're made with no grooves.
No grooves.
And then we the first thing that happens, it's a precision
perfectly
process.
Flat. Precision process, and then of course the grooves are in turn are cut in by computer control. So as a result, you get more consistent depth and you're more consistent depth, width, and spacing all the way across the face. So as a result, it's almost like I call the ball as it's going to hit. You're going to get more of a more consistent imprint of the ball. Maybe call an equal compression load. Call it maybe something else.
It came from Bob and the R&D group, basically saying, you know, there's probably a better way to do this to deliver a more consistent part. So we decided to, in the process, make them initially with no grooves, and then level the face perfectly with a fly cut, and then each one of those grooves is actually cut in individually, one at a time. That's one of the last things that happens before finishing. So you end up with a part that's just
basically as perfect as you could get.
That's what we possibly can get it.
It's a little bit more time consuming and a little bit more tedious for the folks actually making the part, but it ends up with a really good wedge that gets you. It's all around just a better product.
Yeah, it's a small premium for something that's developed a little bit more consistent, obviously.
Right.
Hey, Bob, you mentioned Trevino a while back, and the feel that guy has, and he was in your top five. Can you share with us who those top five might be?
Well, I would say one of the better ones ever would be. But it's pretty tough. It's a crowded top five because I
be careful how you answer this.
Oh, it's a tough one. It's a really tough one because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Oh, you can take it to eight if you like, top eight.
Why don't you just name a couple of guys that you really
couple of guys that
We could reword the question.
I was going to say, I don't want to snuff any of our title staffers because I tell you, Brad Faxon is probably one of the better ones.
Without a doubt.
Definitely. He's one of my testers. Tom Pernice is definitely another one of my testers. Davis, all these players I really, really work with a heck of a lot. But I said, going back to Trevino, because Trevino, he grew up in a day, why I liked him so much more, because he had what I call, he was a player that was able to control trajectory. And I think, I don't want to say it as a negative, but a lot of the younger players come up now, they don't know how to control trajectory. And I don't want to get in a scoreline situation, but they're the players that are going to have a little tough problem, especially to the new scoreline situation. The player who grew up controlling his trajectory is a player who is definitely a benefit. Lee could do that. You know, it's almost like, I hate to picture this, but it's almost like there's a window of 27 shots. Now, visualize, it's hard to explain this, but if you can visualize high, mid, low type trajectories into a green, and each one of those, then also you can treadle them to center, left, and right. So each one of those have three, and you can hit it to, say you want to hit it high right, then you can want to make that ball go straight, right, and left, and draw from there. You know what I mean? So there's 27 different shots, and Lee was one that could hit it. All the older players, Phil Rogers is another one, he could hit those 27 shots. I mentioned that to a younger player today. Oh, God, I can't hit all those shots. And it's amazing. I mean, they were able to execute these shots. I sat there with Lee, and I saw him. He said, watch this, Vokey. Boom, hit a little shot in. Boom, it'll kick to the left. Watch it, same shot. Boom, it'll kick to the right. Then he'll kick one straight forward. I said, how you do that? Jeez. I mean, it's amazing. That's what the good wedge players can do. You know, and it's then getting back to the original question, Lee was definitely high up there. He was definitely high up there. And, of course, back and he played today when Chip's old Vigru was a bladder golf balls too, you know, and it's in Persimmon Woods. But he definitely was there. But then the next ones I got to rank – best right now, playing right now, I'd say, is Jose Maria Lazabal. Probably one of the better.
I would agree with that.
Jose Maria's up there. Seve was very good. Seve could put on an exhibition. And then coming right along, of course, Phil. Lefty is right up there. And I'll say one of my other, maybe a little prejudice being Canadian, I'll say Mike Weir. Mike Weir is one of the very, very good short
guys. Anybody that wins the Masters has got to be a pretty good wedge player. So.
Very good. I could say Tiger. Tiger's Tiger. I mean, what can I say? You know, you could say he's great. Tiger's definitely there. Yes, there's no doubt about it. So those are my top. And surprisingly, I'm going to throw another one in. It'll really surprise you. Is John Daly.
No, I agree. I would definitely mention him.
He's got that nice, low, syrupy swing that I like to. And I'm not just saying because he plays tightless wedges, but, John is a very talented individual. a short game.
Yeah, and that, I mean, it's a God-given ability for a lot of them, but you don't get as good as those guys are without a lot of practice. And I would definitely put him right up there with some of the best wedge players out there right now. So,
maybe just one last question, guys, and you probably touched on it earlier, but one last question. If a customer says, I'm going to make a buying decision on wedges, what would you tell them? Would you start like where you started with Steve earlier, that let's start with a pitching wedge and go from there?
Definitely. Yeah, there's – you know, wedges are scoring clubs. They're not just trouble clubs, and they fill that, you know, virtually every shot from within 100 yards. And you know, from Bob's work, he's basically over the years refined a process that he goes through with each tour player. We've tried to encourage folks to go through a very similar process, and it kind of starts with how far do you hit your pitching wedge, because that, you know, that tells you how many yards from that distance in. The kinds of shots you're going to need to hit. And for most folks, that's at least two clubs inside of their pitching wedge.
Yeah, what I like to say, and a good rule of thumb is anywhere, you know, for yardage, I would say, I like to see per gap, I like to see 4 to 6 degrees, no more than 6 degrees between clubs. And also, because yardage, I figure you can get anywhere from 2 to 4 yards per degree, depending on your club head speed. You know, so you can judge from there.
So if I was starting, I'd say, go figure that. Go look up the loft on your pitching wedge, because there's an awful lot of them that are 44, 45, 46 degrees. And then, what types of shots do you like to hit around the greens? Are you a slider or a digger? Don't do more than 4 to 6 degrees. And usually you end up with very common combinations of, you know, with a 46-degree pitching wedge, which is really popular now, you end up with guys buying a 52 and a 58. Or 52, 56, 60, depending on how comfortable you are, or how big the yardage gaps are from there. Bob, what's the most popular combination?
And bounce is your friend.
So definitely. Right now on tour, players are usually playing, it's almost like the 56 has become almost a club of the past. It's always becoming 54s, 55s are popular because of the distance.
I'm going to have to go out and buy another wedge now.
59, 60s. This is what I'm saying now. The weekend golfer comes in, I almost like to see him. I don't like to see – I was trying to push anything. I would like to say maybe 58 degrees. I don't want to say it's going to take sales away, but I think if I'm going to fit somebody, I like the 54-58 combination, 53-58 combination, right in that range. I thought many times 60, I've said many times, you put the weekend golfer, you put a 60-degree in his hands, it's almost like nothing good happens. All of a sudden he starts opening up too much, which you don't want to do. You know, when you start laying it wide open, next thing you know, you know, it's adding more loft and more bounce. It's a couple of things that you don't want, you know. But unless he can practice a heck of a lot, I would try to keep him in that.
So those are good
couple.
Starting points. You know, you fit yourself for the distances you need to cover, and then really when we laid out the line, when Bob laid out the line, we tried to make the mid bounce. See, there's a lot of the 54, 56, 58, and 60. There are three bounce choices in each of those in the current line. We tried to make the middle bounce as sort of the best all-around sole and best all-around option for that particular loft. So when in doubt, you know, you default to the mid-bounce. But if you have a particular extreme case where you know you're a digger or a slider, or you know you're in real soft, you know, that Florida sand, and everybody knows it's just that fluffy stuff, that's a high-bounce situation. Or if you're in a place where you know you've got some hard pan, that's a low-bounce situation. But when in doubt, go to the mid-bounce. And have fun doing that, because wedges, if you do it right, you think about the number of shots you hit with them, they are absolutely scoring clubs, and we're just tickled that a lot of people are starting to pay attention to the detail that they go through to outfit themselves in that scoring end of the set. So have fun with it.
Gentlemen, it's been a great time today, great advice, and again, as Kenny said, thank you so much for your time. I know it's precious.
Hey, Bob. I know our listeners are going to want to know this. What's the chances of one of them being able to win one of these Vokey wedges?
Hey, that's good. What do you think, Tom?
We'd love to do it.
Love to.
Oh, man. Can I register? Guys, thanks a million for joining us.
Hey, and if we do that, I can even sign it. That ought to be worth about $2 to get you a cup of coffee. That's my autograph.
They'll take you up on that.
Absolutely. Thanks again, guys.
All right,
you guys.
We enjoyed it.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, that was awesome. And once again, a lucky listener is going to get a chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, that's a pretty big deal. you know, especially if Bob, you know, would sign it or what have you. I mean, I'd, if I was the one that won it, I'd sit it right there in the house. I don't know that I'd ever be able to play it.
You go to the Golf Better button on our homepage, correct?
Yeah, you click on the Golf Better icon on the left-hand side of our homepage, and on there will be a register to win button, and it's one per email, so you can try to do it as many times as you want, but we'll be able to sort those out. And I'm telling you, this is a great opportunity to win a terrific golf club.
Well, Kenny, once again, thanks a bunch, man. That was a great, great episode, and two great guys in Bob and Steve.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, it's a treat for us. It's a treat for me, definitely being able to talk to some of the guys that we get to talk to. You know, we've had Scotty Cameron on. We've had Frank Thomas on. We've had Tom Stikes on. Now we've got Bob Vokey. I mean, it's just incredible, some of the guys that we get to talk to. And these names are not little names in the golf business. So it's definitely a treat, man. I enjoy the heck out of it.
Well, for Kenny Nicholson and for everyone at Evan Watts Golf, thank you for listening. And join us back in 2 weeks when we have another exciting episode of Golf Better at Evan Watts Golf. So long, everyone.